My name's Ollie Taylor and I'm here with John Davis at Gloucestershire Archives. And John has very kindly brought in a series of photos today of a press made by Fielding and Platt. John, looking at this first photo here, what is this press that's pictured?
This is a 350-ton horizontal extrusion press for the extrusion of solder. We made a number of those, as I recall, and they were... It was like a one-piece construction so that it could be actually taken, it could actually taken to site in one piece so that assembly at site was kept to a minimum.
And where is this first picture taken? Is this at Fielding's?
Yes, this is, I think it was, as I think I've said before, we only do normally like dry testing of a machine, but it was in number two hydraulic shop.
And so what would this press have been used for then?
Well, this would extrusion of solder as we know it to buy it in the shops. Today even you can have a solder without a flux content, and you can have what was called multi-cord solder where there was a flux content. And that was a little bit more difficult. But the basic press was very similar, whether you were doing cord solder or ordinary solid solder.
So let's move on to the second picture here and talk about how the press would have worked. So looking at the machinery here in detail, how would this press have worked then?
Well, you've got at the back of the press on the same set of bed plates where you have your pumping equipment. And so it was sort of a fairly self-contained piece of equipment. This picture does show the billet loader, which was how the billet was loaded into the container for extrusion. It was fairly simple, and the billets weren't all that heavy, and sometimes they were heated slightly, but not a lot. In fact, I remember on one occasion going to Bachelor Robinson at Lenestley, and they had a conventional little oven from a kitchen that they used to warm the billets up in. And the guy just had an asbestos glove that he used, and he just put the billet on the loader, pressed a button, and the loader tilted, and then he was able to push the billet into the container. And then withdraw the billet loader out of the way, and then the extrusion cycle was ready to start.
And so the billet loader in this picture here is the kind of flat tray in the centre of the picture.
That's correct. And the billet was rolled down there and pushed into the container, like I said. And then the loader then had to be retracted before the main ram could come forward to do the extrusion.
And the billet was then loaded into that circular hole there that we can see in the centre.
That's a container. That would have been a heated container, usually by a series of cylindrical heaters sited around the container.
And looking at the other details of the press, we can see the control panel on the left-hand side with a couple of dials there. What would the various buttons have been used for, and what would the dials have been used for measuring?
Well, you would have one of the pressure gauges would be to record the pressure in the main cylinder to see what pressure was needed to extrude. And I think that pressure could be varied if necessary. I believe it had, it looks like that might have been a pre-fill tank. Sometime you had a pre-fill tank which enabled you to take the main ram forward before actually extrusion started, but to do an approach stroke without using a lot of pumping capacity. And that would probably have been a gauge with the pre-fill pressure in.
So that would have been the dial on the right-hand side that would have displayed that there. And then the control panel beneath it would have been used for operating.
Yeah, there would have been there's some push buttons. It's a fairly simple backwards and forwards movement. So there wouldn't have been too many controls. A few lamps there to indicate possibly positions of the stroke of the main cylinder.
And what about the gauge on the right-hand side and those couple of buttons there? What would they have controlled?
I think the one on the one on the top right, underneath, just beneath the fielding name, but that was probably a ram speed indicator, as I recall, because sometimes it was necessary to record what was the best extrusion speed for a particular type of solder. So they were able to note and record particular speeds. The two switches underneath, they could have been, one of those looks of it might be a stop button. And I think that had to be pretty prominent, because if anything suddenly went wrong, I don't know, somebody got caught in the machine or something, but obviously wrong, they would push the button and everything would come to a halt.
There seems to be in the top middle of the photo a kind of ruler that would have been used for measuring something. What was that for?
Yeah, that would have measured the stroke of the main ram, so that they could, once again, it could maybe use for record purposes.
Brilliant. And so moving on to the next photo in the sequence, we can begin to see the solder emerging from the machine. And it's almost like a spider's web. How many bits of solder was it extruding at any one time there, John?
Well, this is like a multi-extrusion one. This wouldn't be obviously a flux solder, of course. But these extrusions, you can see they're probably only about an eighth of an inch or so diameter. And so it was a multi-hole die. There usually looks like about at least six extrusions coming out. But they were only very small small diameters, and so it was a little bit difficult to be able to sort of stop them get tangling up. And so there was like a device that we made. I think we only ever made one of these. Certainly in my day, we only made one of these, because sometimes the customer, like multi-call solder, for instance, they had their own ways of dealing with their extrusions, etc., some of which were patented. They know that they did a multi-cord solder with five little holes where the flux was fed in. So we obviously couldn't do five, so I think we got away with doing three. But it seemed to work. But anyway, this picture shows these, as you say, looks like a spider's web of extrusions coming out. And there's another picture I think we've got here that it shows what happened to them after. Yeah, this is a side view which shows it a little bit better. And there's the it looks like it might have been eight extrusions. Yes, it was eight extrusions came out, and they were the operators had to be pretty quick, because this solder tended to it wasn't all that hot, but it tended to cool down quite quickly, so it wasn't quite so manageable. But the idea was that they got fed out over into a series of sets of rollers, which sort of directed them vertically downwards into some what were called coiling pans. And it was a cylindrical container with an insert of a conical shape. And the idea was the extrusions dropped down into the gap between the outer cylinder and the conical section. And they were directed by this conical shape. They were able to coil round and round in the bottom of the bottom of the container, so that when the containers became full, they could be emptied. So you would have had eight coils of solder about an eighth of an inch diameter.
That's fantastic, John. And looking at these rollers and the rolling mechanism, The rollers themselves are on wheels, so there must have been a kind of bit of trial and error in finding exactly the distance to put the rollers from the extrusion press.
Yes, it could well have been. That's the only reason I can think that we did that. It was all a bit looks a bit Heath Robinson there, but if I recall, we did it only once in my time, but I believe it had been done once before in the past. But I don't know whether that's exactly the truth or not. I just can't remember.
That's fantastic, John. And we're in hydraulic 2 here, and behind the solder extrusion here, we see a small table, and there's a sign that reads strictly for tool grinding only. What was that machine on the table there?
Well, this was obviously a small grinder with the usual two stones. This was obviously kept for people or fitters who wanted to grind up, let's say, their chisels, their scrapers or whatever. And so it had to be kept, those stones had to be kept in a reasonable condition for that purpose, because sometimes there'd be lots of other bits and pieces to grind, and sometimes they would even grind non-ferrous metals. Of course, that tended to stick in the stones, and so when you try to grind tools, you tended to sort of, burn them rather than grind them. So it was kept particularly for the purpose of tool grinding. And there was a big, larger stone elsewhere where you could use virtually any purpose.
And behind that table with the grindstone on it, what is that area there?
That looks as you say, it was in hydraulic too, and that looks as if that was the component stores, which had a first floor as well. In fact, we can see the stepladder going up, and a lot of the equipment that had been either purchased particularly for a job or standard equipment like studs and nuts and bolts, etc., would have been stored.
And that's where the staircase on the right hand side of the photos would have led to the upper floor of that component store.
Yeah. Yes.
And who would have run the component store, John?
There would have been a particular storekeeper. One I seem to recall was a little guy called, I think, Charlie Cambridge, was it? And he looked a little bit like Winston Churchill. He was sort of short and about, probably wasn't quite as large as Churchill, but he had glasses, and that's what I seem to recall. But obviously there were others. In later years, I think there was a guy called Tom Williams, who used to be a storeman there. That's about as far as my memory goes there. I could probably stand to be corrected by others who might listen to this, but there we are.
Thanks, John. And was there a guy called Wally Windridge who used to run the stores?
Whether it was that stores or not, I don't know, because we had other stores as well. But Wally, he may well have done. I just cannot remember. I'm sorry. It's going back quite a number of years.
It's a wonderful piece of reminiscence there, John, just taking us through this machine and the process of it and describing the various elements of it and Hydraulic 2, where it was situated in these photos. Is there anything else you'd like to add, either about the machines, Hydraulic 2, or any of the details that we've talked about?
There was only one thing that doesn't show on any of these solder presses was the flux pot, because as you were extruding solder, then you had to feed. This was only wouldn't have been a multi extrusion. It would have been a single extrusion, round about not much more than a quarter of an inch diameter, I suppose, into which was fed solder in three places. But none of these photographs actually show a flux spot. So at the flux, it was electrically heated, so it could be fed down. It was an elaborate process, really, to actually feed the flux into the extrusion. But similar things had been done in the past with the lead sheathing of electrical cables, which was long, long before my time, but similar principle.
That's brilliant. Thank you, John.